Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, February 3rd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. You can access them through the website at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. Go to that page, click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, and it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book is a narrative, or contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17, almost 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative experience of emotion that I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. So you can make that your possession by simply clicking, printing the PDF file, copying it off and using it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app. You can also download from that website a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process, or they've called in with powerful testimonials about how the use of that process has improved their quality of their life. And we hope people do that. Download the app, print off the worksheet, listen to the archive of shows where people have been stepped through the worksheet, test it out for yourself, see how it works for you, and then if you have comments or questions or testimonials, give us a call. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. When you call that number and press 1, it puts a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I can announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. So we appreciate when people do that, because it is far easier for us to live into our intention, which is to be of service, when people call in and let us know exactly what might be of use. That's part of what's been happening and why we're working our way through the Way of Mastery this year. And we've been through the first lesson a couple times and went through the second lesson once, and we're about to start into the second lesson again. If no one has a comment or a question on the several sessions we've had so far, which have been mostly just monologues on my part, reading the Way of Mastery as part of the Christ Mind material and trying to point out how it is so compatible with Guy Finley's work, Michael Rice's work, A Course in Miracles, what Byron Katie does with her questioning, her negative thoughts, etc. And the critical message in the first two lessons is you create your own experience. So much so that that's literally the title on the page of the second lesson. You create your experience. And yesterday I read the first two pages slowly and methodically, and we came through the idea that as you begin to focus on, to refine, to deepen, and to mature into what he's calling here the way of the heart, it's wise to begin at the beginning. What is that beginning? The beginning of this pathway is simply this. You remain as your Creator created you to be. You are an infinite focus of consciousness. Your very sense of existence serves as nothing more than a feedback loop or a feedback mechanism so that you can witness the effects of the choices you are making. And it says here, this is not at the conscious level. That happens too. Right? It's a really good thing to wake up and to understand what I'm consciously choosing and to consciously be aware of the effects of those choices. But here they're talking about your life, your experience in the physical realm is a feedback mechanism so that you can become aware of the choices you're making in the very deep, deep, deep depth of your mind, that part of your mind that rests right alongside the mind of your Creator. All minds are joined. You are part of the one mind. You are a spark of infinite consciousness. All these things are saying the same thing. Therefore, in each moment of your existence, which includes this bodily incarnation, you are literally allowing, through deliberate choice, though perhaps you're not consciously aware of it, you're allowing to bring forth a vibration of a thought or a vibration of creation. And every time you do that, you communicate that to the world and everyone around you. Whether it's a friend, a parent, a child, a beloved, or you're communicating it to the nature around you, the cloud that passes through the sky or the earth itself. What you choose to focus on is a demonstration of what you value. Each gesture, each thought, the way that the body breathes, all of these things are going on constantly, and they are communicating or they are revealing the effect of whatever it is that you have allowed to make a home in your mind. Understand well, then, that the way of the heart requires something of you. No one's going to make you get on the path to the way of the heart, but if you want to be on the path of the way of the heart, this is what you have to do. You have to allow yourself to rest in the simplicity of the following truth, capital T, truth. You are pure spirit. You remain undefiled and unaffected by anyone or anything. You are given full power to choose and therefore to create your experience as you would have it be. And the lack of awareness of this truth changes nothing. The truth is the truth. You don't have to understand what gravity is. You don't have to know any scientific facts about it. It is still having an impact on you. That's the same with this deep truth, which is the beginning of the way of the heart. It's a requirement to be in the way of the heart, is to wake up to, allow yourself to rest in the simplicity of this truth. You are choosing what you focus your conscious awareness upon in each new present moment, And it is the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment, which actually creates your experience of life in that moment. This is not the egoic I. This is not your egoic mind. This is not your conscious mind that's doing this. Because that, the egoic mind, who you think you are, all your identifications with a sense of self, are just creations of your thought process that have come along down the line. It's a very, very small part of the capital M mind that you are a part of. What we're speaking of here is the capital I of the pure spirit, capital S self, capital M mind that you're a part of. You are pure spirit, and therefore we would have you know you are only this. And in each moment, regardless of what you believe you see, regardless of the feelings that arise within your awareness, you and you alone are wholly 100% completely responsible for those things that arise within your awareness. No one has caused them. No great force in the universe has made all of this perception well up into your consciousness. You have selected it. Just as you would go into a grocery store and choose what you would have for dinner and then go home and experience your creation, so too do you choose each experience of your life in each new present moment. When you choose a perception, you lodge it in your mind. Then it expresses itself through the body, through the environment that you create around yourself, through the friends that you would call into your awareness. Every aspect of life you live is the symbol of what you have chosen to experience, and therefore to convey throughout creation. Again, the way of the heart begins with the simple acceptance of this truth. I am as the Creator created me to be. Made in its image, I am always creating my experience. What then would you ask your creations to communicate? Why do you make the choices you're making? You all know perfectly well that sometimes you seem to be compelled, and the ego wants you to believe that you are compelled. Compelled to certain actions, certain feelings, certain choices, certain perceptions, certain statements by something that surely exists outside of yourself. This is never true. This is just a false perception. In no circumstances is there anything of creation that has the power to dictate to you the choice you will make. This is never true. You are never compelled from something outside of you to think, speak, act, feel, experience something. In no circumstance is there anything of creation that has the power to dictate to you the choices you make. The next thing, the way of the heart, the pathway would have you know, is that if you want peace, you must align with the mind of creation. You must move into allowance and surrender. You must choose to allow all things, accept all things, embrace all things. And that's the only way to transcend all things. Therefore, it says once again, the pathway of awakening, the way of the heart, must start with the decision to embrace the truth that is true always. So they're going to state it again, another way, another chance to understand what is this truth that is true always. You are a creator of all that you think, see, and experience. You are free always. Nothing impinges upon you. Nothing impinges upon you except for the thoughts you have chosen to hold within your mind. Nothing imprisons you but your own perception of imprisonment. Nothing limits you at any level or dimension of experience save that which you have chosen. Now, when this book and this reading talks about the word imprisonment, I flash to Roger McGowan, 26 years on death row in Texas. Pierre Pradervan has been communicating with him for decades now and has written several books. One of them is titled Messages of Life from Death Row. So here's a man who's physically imprisoned for something he didn't do, and he's choosing to focus on thoughts, observations, truths, much more in line with the way of mastery than the bitterness and the hurt and the violence and the abuse that happens in the prison. So yes, he's physically being kept in a 6 foot by 6 foot by 10 foot cell in isolation. And almost every interaction he has with another human being, they work to be abusive to him. And yet he comes away with focusing on things like love is the fundamental law of the universe. Love is the reply to every situation. Love is our reason for existing. It's the essence of what we are. Love is easy. Hate is the difficult role to play. He comes away with a statement, a summary in the beginning of this book. Everyone creates their own reality, essentially through their way of looking at and interpreting events, people, and situations. So that's what gets triggered for me when I read the word imprisonment. I am only imprisoned. You are only imprisoned by the thoughts you hold on to, by the perception you create of being restricted or imprisoned in any way. The way of the heart, the way of the awakened heart then, embraces all things, trusts all things, accepts, allows, surrenders to all things, and eventually transcends all things. Why? Because that's what this pathway is about. It's not about avoidance. It's not about judgment. It's not about restriction. It's not about denial. This is a pathway of acceptance, embracing, allowing, trusting, and eventually transcending all things. How could that be? Because it begins by assuming complete and total responsibility for what is being channeled through it. This awakened heart is a channel of the creative energy. This awakened heart is awake to the fact that it is a channel. It is conscious of its role as a channel for the creative activity, the creative energy, this energy that some would call love. You serve as a channel. From the moment you arise in the morning until the moment you arise in the next morning, even during your sleep, you're choosing that which flows through your consciousness at some deep, deep level at the depth of your mind, which rests right next to the mind of the Creator. This is not a conscious choice, but it's a pathway that I can use my conscious awareness to begin to align with and to choose to focus on that creative energy and the truth that I am a conduit for it. And that's how I create my experience of life. The goal that we seek has never changed. It is in truth a journey without any distance. It's merely a return of our awareness to where we always were. so that we can begin anew to create differently, to create clearly, to create with perfect knowledge, that if you're experiencing something, it is because you are the source of it and for no other reason. As I was preparing for today, I was kept coming back to the word epistemology. So there's etiology, which relates to most often a medical term, like what is the root cause of this or that thing, a disease or a symptom pattern or whatever. And epistemology is about roots too, but it's about the root of how it is that I think I know what I know. And this pathway is about liberation from adherence to a belief, a teaching, a dogma, a teacher. Please don't follow. Don't follow anybody. Please get on the path for yourself and discover your true nature. Discover the truth that is true always. Discover through your own direct observation that you remain as you were created to be. Discover how it is by bringing your awareness back to yourself, to your own mind over and over again, joyfully, playfully, with song, with dance, with childlike innocence. Oh, look at the mess I've created in my life. Look at how I'm choosing to fight and resist against what's in my bank account, who my neighbor is and how they're yelling at me, the physical sensations in the body that seem unpleasant. Just look at how I'm making it worse by fighting against it. I had somebody in my office yesterday. He's in his 50s. He came in with a list of ways his life is transforming for the better since he's just learned in the past few months the value of canceling any unachieved goal. And he literally came into therapy with, you know, a vice grip on this situation that's bad and he wants it to change, and a vice grip in his mind on this situation that's bad and he wants it to change. And he thought I was absolutely out of my mind, crazy, help me, I need a new therapist kind of thing, when I suggested he start canceling his goal for this, that, or the other thing. And here we are just a couple months later, maybe a month and a half later. 2 weeks ago he came in and he had a list of things. Now he comes in, he's got at least 8 things, big things, that as he's canceled the goal for them to change, as he's fought within himself to resist and create anger and frustration and sadness and hopelessness about these various things, one by one they're transforming. And it's got him shaking his head. And I'm talking about things that have been, and he's in his 50s, things that have been in the pattern they've been in since his teen years, since his 20s, since his 30s. He's awakening to how he was creating a constriction in the flow of life energy, not just within his own body, but with his interactions with others. This has been transformational in business deals that he's been involved in. It's been transformational in his relationship with his father. He literally said he had the thought to cancel goals for how his relationship with his father goes, and within days, his father calls him, and instead of the usual, hi, how are you? Okay, here, talk to your mother. And he's off, and usually his dad's off the phone in 3 minutes. He said they were on the phone for over 40 minutes. And at the end of it, his father says to him something he's only said to him, and this is what my patient said. One other time in his life, when he was 16 years old, his father said, I love you. And he ended the call by telling my patient in his 50s, I love you. This is just a day or two after my patient consciously decides, I'm going to cancel my goal for this relationship to change with my dad. He had 8 examples like that. He was awakening to how his focus of his mind energy, his choice to allow the flow, is dramatically changing his experience of life. The book goes on to say the way of the heart is not about gaining power. It's not a way in which you'll finally be able to make the world be what you would want it to be. Rather, this is a pathway in which you learn to embrace, trust, and allow all things that unfold in your life, and that's the only way to transcend them. You don't do it in order for things to change. You do it to change your experience in the moment by being in allowance, being at play in the kingdom, being in the childlike innocence and the joyful appreciation for the gift of life that is flowing through you. This is a pathway in which you learn to transcend by dissolving from your consciousness every perception, every thought, every energy which is out of alignment with what is true, with what is actually happening in life. The thought of death is out of alignment. The thought of fear is out of alignment. The thought of guilt is out of alignment. So what's in alignment? The thought of eternal life is in alignment. The thought of perfect fearlessness and joy and safety is in alignment. The thought of peace is in alignment. The realization of innocence, your innocence, the innocence of your fellow brothers and sisters, your fellow beings of brilliance and light traveling through the world experience with you, that's in alignment. The thoughts of joy and forgiveness are in alignment, and they reflect the truth that is true always. For although you are given complete free will to create as you choose, the soul, the heart of you, begins to learn that what brings it the highest joy, the highest peace, and the highest bliss imaginable is that and only that which flows from the mind of the Creator, through the mind of the channel, you as a conduit, through the soul, and that energy of allowance, embracing, surrendering, accepting, that is what expresses itself in the field of experience as bliss. It is for this reason that your Creator's will for you is that you be happy, that you be in alignment with the flow of creation, and that your happiness is found in choosing to restore your alignment with the flow of life. This is just anathema. This is the opposite of what most of us in the Western world have been taught to do. We've been taught to rely on the intellect. We've been taught to evaluate and judge. We've been taught to compare. We've been taught to create our own petty compulsions in place of this creative energy of desire. We've been taught to struggle. This, the pathway of a heart, is a pathway that begins with a commitment to being in alignment with the flow of creation, with the divine mind, an awakening. And it's founded on this premise. You are perfectly free at all times. Everything that is experienced has been by your choice, and at no time has there been any other cause. And that is going to just shake up the Western mind. It's going to shake up the ego. It's going to stir up conflict, denial, sometimes bitterness, rage. This is a pathway that has a solution for all of those negative energies. Now, this seems simple, and yet what soul hasn't had a resistance to this idea? You know, you bake a cake and it turns out well, and you say, oh, what a fine boy am I. However, if you bake a cake and it turns out badly, you think, well, it must have been the flour. Somebody sold me bad yeast. Something's wrong with the oven. Couldn't have been me, because my conscious mind desires a different result. This pathway is about transcending the conscious logical mind, putting the intellect aside, refusing to treat the intellect as a god, learning there is another, a multitude of other pathways for you to be open, to be feeling, to be in the flow, to be connected to, with a higher source. That's called in this pathway the awakened heart. And it takes courage for this conscious logical mind of mine to look upon every one of my creations, all my negative thoughts, all my feelings of being, you know, persecuted, all the manifestations of bitterness and anger and physical ache and pain, and to look on each of them with love and the innocence of a child and say, oh, well, this is what I've done. I don't really like how that feels, so maybe I could do something differently. So, for example, if you plant a garden and everything in it withers and dies, the goal of this pathway is to get to the point where I can smile, look on it, and say, well, I planted this garden, and I alone have done this, and I'm responsible for the results, and that's just the way it is. There's no food here, so I'll get hungry. If I stay around here, I might as well go to the store, move on, create again in the next moment. This is important because a long time ago, your soul, the soul, everyone's soul, began to create the perception that it was something other than what it was created to be. It used its freedom of choice to create a voice for the ego that emerged in consciousness. And as the soul that deepest aspect of your mind that you've all known began to identify with a voice that was other than the voice of creation, that started to view and create perceptions of itself as separate and lonely and bitter and sad and angry and betrayed. When we identify with that voice, we come to believe that it is the truth about us. Therefore, if what you create is not up to snuff, it means that you, in the core of your beingness, are some kind of a failure. This is never true. You cannot fail. It says in another part of this work, it's not crazy to play in the kingdom and create the dream of separation. That doesn't even create pain. What creates pain is identifying with it, losing truth, losing sight of the truth that you remain as you were created to be. So your mind is telling you that you're some kind of a failure, but I say unto you, in reality, failure is not even remotely possible. Why? Well, if you plant a garden and the seed does not turn into a beautiful flower, it withers and it dies, that experience is a creation, and you've done it. And because all events in time and space, everything you experience are perfectly neutral, there is in reality never failure. So this thing doesn't, it remains as a seed, or it becomes a sprout with a blossom and then it wilts and dies. It's just energy returning to a different form and it becomes part of the creation. The only failure seems to occur within your own consciousness when you believe that it is not acceptable. So learn to receive and embrace your own creation with love and with innocence. You can choose to look upon it, to experience it, and to recognize your perfect safety in doing so. That's what we're calling you to in this work. Constantly remembering your perfect safety. You are perfectly safe, and it is perfectly safe to look upon and embrace every one of your creations, even if, as you experience them, you don't enjoy them or they seem painful. As you embrace it, as you look upon it with childlike innocence, you can decide whether to continue in that form of creation or whether to think differently and approach things differently. That's where the catch is. That part of the mind began to teach you a long, long time ago that there are certain things that are acceptable and certain things that are not acceptable. Certain things that you should take responsibility for and certain things that you should deny responsibility for. And that is a conflict. That conflict creates the illusion of separation. And when it's taken to its extreme, a person discovers hospitals are full of those who are in deep depression, paranoia, the feeling within the being, within the human mind, of feeling alienated and alone. Just today, across the news feed, here's a very, what society would call a beautiful physical body. She makes, you know, she wins a beauty pageant. She's smart enough to make it through college and get through law school. She is well-spoken and loving and gentle with her friends. And she took her own life, walked off a building. How could that happen? Within the context of the culture, anyone looking at it from the outside would say she's got everything. She's got the physical beauty. She's got the intelligence. She's got the financial success. Somewhere inside her mind, she did not feel her true nature. She was desperate enough and in pain enough to choose to end her life. The book goes on to say, helplessness, hopelessness, despair, anger, and hatred, these are all symptoms of a fundamental delusion that has occurred within the depth of the mind. It has occurred because there's been a long history of having cultivated the skill of listening to the wrong voice. The wrong voice is your voice of your ego. The ego teaches you to judge, to pick, to select what you will be responsible for. And the more you move into that consciousness, the harder it seems to ever hope for a chance of transcending the sense of separation, the sense of conflict, the sense of pain, the absence of peace. How many of you have not known the feeling of resting your head on the pillow at night and not being able to sleep because it's just not going the way you expected? Life isn't unfolding the way I want. The reason you cannot sleep is because you are in judgment of your own creation. But it is possible to cultivate just the opposite, in which you learn to look with perfect innocence upon all things, everything that arises within the field of your experience. It's possible to look with innocence and with wonder at every feeling from the place of curiosity, as you would look upon a cloud that passes through the sky. Look at it, marvel at it, marvel at its shape, its color, embrace it, knowing that it does not affect the purity of the sky through which it temporarily floats. understanding you are not your thoughts. You may have a lot of judgmental, negative, bitter, depressed thoughts. That is not your essence. Those thoughts are like clouds floating through the sky of your awareness. Each of your creations is exactly like this. Everything that you experience about your life is exactly like this. It arises in the field of time and space. You experience it, and then it fades away. Every hurt that you have ever known is like a cloud that began to pass into the field of your awareness because you perceived things in a certain way. If that hurt is still lodged within you, it is because you latched onto it. You followed the voice of ego, which caused you to believe that you are identified with that feeling, with that perception. And because you mistakenly thought it was you, you assumed that if you let go of it, you might disappear. You might die. That is error in thought. You are not your thoughts. The human mind is that field within creation, within consciousness, that has learned to become so identified with perceptions, with experiences and feelings, even those that are not necessarily comfortable, that it believes if it lets go of them, it, the human mind, will die. From our perspective, as we look on the energy fields of those of you that are still identified with this dimension, it looks as though you are gripping and causing energy to condense. Your knuckles are white, holding on to limitation and guilt and unworthiness and doubt. We see how you are creating the upset that you say you don't want to have, and you cling to it almost as though it is in a desperation to maintain your existence, because if you let go of it, you will no longer exist. You seek innocence and peace. You seek abundance, prosperity, and joy. But often, when you touch these things, it frightens you. Why? Because the truth of the kingdom requires openness, trust, expansiveness and spaciousness. It involves allowing, trusting, witnessing, and letting things come and go. It involves learning to cultivate a deep enjoyment of whatever arises. Seeing that all things are just modifications of consciousness itself, and then letting them go when it's time to do so. Rest assured, there is no one, not a single soul, who has ever discovered something that was birthed in time that did not also end in time. How much of your suffering comes because you're clinging to a lifeless past and insisting that you carry it with you still? You're doing that because in the past you became identified with these thoughts, with these energies, and they're basically just clouds passing by, and you claimed them as your own identity, and then you believed if you released it, that would mean you must change, and you would not go on. Creation itself that flows from the mind of God is ongoing forever. You, your essence, your consciousness will never cease to be. You will go on forever, and forever, and forever, and forever. You will go on forever exactly as you are now. Or you can allow the mind of Creator, of the Creator, of God, of light, of love, to flow through you, carrying you to an ever greater expansiveness and deepening your awareness of the infinite loveliness of the power of creation, the power of the mind of the Creator, and its energy flowing through you. This last segment reminds me very strongly of Michael Singer and his work in the class we did with the Thursday support group, learning to live from a place of surrender. And he talks about the energy of life the experience of life energies that we encounter and how they move up. They're supposed to be flowing through us. We're supposed to be this open conduit where the experiences of life arise and pass and arise and pass in this unimpeded flow, much like this work and the way of the heart is talking about becoming a conduit for that life energy. And Michael Singer says, whenever we grab onto something because we think it's so lovely and we don't want it to pass, we create an obstruction. We create a turbulence. We create a negative experience out of that positive thing. And whenever we have something that, and we're in the flow of experiencing it and it comes up as too intense or as painful or, and we don't want it and we tighten and we create another obstruction and we make it even stronger negativity as we try to push it and resist it and push it away. Life is the flow of creation. You are a part of that. Everyone you see is a part of that. This pathway in the awakened heart would have you awaken to that actuality and learn to enjoy and appreciate and observe and participate in this the way you would sitting in a symphony. He talks about how the energies of the heart, your heart space, the space where you experience the emotional energies, etc. Not your thoughts about them, but the energy center of you is like one of the greatest musical instruments ever created. And it is capable of energy flow and vibrations and experience that go beyond words each new heartbeat. And rather than just experiencing it with all of its beauty and its intensity and its subtleties, we try to control it. We say we like this feeling and we don't like that feeling and we don't like this energy flow of creation. We don't like this life event that's unfolding and we don't like this person's tone. And we push and grab and try to hold on to certain things and try to push away other things and try to block our experience of other things. And he says that would be like going to a symphony concert and then, you know, you've got this panel in front of you and every different instrument is on a separate channel heading, you know, into your headphones. And you say, gee, I'd really like to just hear the oboe. And you tune everything else out except the oboe. Well, you're not really getting an experience of the symphony. Guy Finley talks about somebody who comes into a town and he says, we need to improve. And this is a volunteer community orchestra and they're middle-aged to older people and they have great fun and camaraderie. And so they get a new orchestra leader and he goes, we have to improve. And next thing you know, he has thrown everyone out of the orchestra except the person who plays the triangle. And he constantly yells at the person that they're not playing the triangle just perfectly. That's not a symphony when you're down to just one person banging on a triangle. That's what most of us are trying to do with life. We try to cherry pick. I'll take this, but I won't take that. I like this, but I don't like that. And that is how we create our experience of life and our suffering. And that's where we'll end the reading for today and open it up to comments and questions. We've got about 10 minutes left. We have 11 people on the call, nobody in the chat room, 563-999-3581. What is resonating for you with this? Give us a call. Press 1. Let me know how it's landing with you to go so slowly through the way of mastery. How does it sit with you to be asked to accept every experience of life as your own creation? How to even begin to question that everything that happens is neutral and is allowable and is acceptable and is something you can trust and embrace. What's that stirring up for you as you listen? 563-999-3581. Give us a call. Press 1. Today's a Thursday, so there will be a support group tonight. All the information on how to join us for that is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. And we welcome you to join us or forward that information to somebody else that you think would benefit. It is a lovely group of people.
This is Celinda.
Welcome, Celinda.
Well, you asked for feedback on this, and I have a bunch of things popping at the moment in my life, and I'm convinced that I have spent my 78 years being prepped for this next step in life, which is the way of mastery, because I think I'm growing brain cells very quickly. You asked about how we felt about going so slowly, and I'm very impatient. And I'm also very familiar with spiritual indigestion from being so impatient and wanting to gobble everything up all at once. And so that's challenging for me. And it's good because every time I listen to the show and you go over something again, I feel like it's implanting. It's like you've planted the seed and now you're watering it. And I'm helping you because I'm the ground. And so that feels really good. I've also noticed that it is helping me clarify a lot with the rage that I know I have inside of me and being able to be willing to cancel my goals. A lot of times I don't even use the work wake-up sheet. Like I just don't seem to need to anymore. Life keeps bringing, by my permission, my megaphone, more and bigger events to help me deal with rage in a way that is transformative for me and hopefully for the other person. So I just wanted to share that with you. I've had two or three events just recently where someone has been enraged with me, and to be able to process that quicker, more and more quickly, is really amazing. I'm very grateful. So I will learn patience. I will learn to not be a spiritual glutton, and I will follow along with you at whatever pace you feel is the right pace.
Well, yeah, okay, but the right pace for me may not be the right pace for you. And remember, one big part of this teaching is for you to tap into, in your own way, your own inner guidance. So if you get guided to move ahead, please do. If you're guided to stick with the pace that is unfolding on the show, do that as well.
Well, I'll definitely move ahead if I feel guided and within constraints around my time, my 24 hours a day, and the things I've chosen to be part of in my life. But I really enjoy your expanding on things and fleshing them out in ways that I would have rushed through them and said, oh, I got it. I'll go on to the next. So, yes, I definitely would go on if I had the inclination and the time, the intuitive feeling and the time, I would definitely go ahead. because I feel like the little kid in the sandbox. Oh, my goodness, what am I creating now? And how can I do something different and new in my life? So I just wanted to share that with you. That
all right.
I am enjoying the process in the midst of my challenges.
All right. Blessings. I will mute you and turn on the next person. Thank you for that call and comment. And this is area code 513. You're in the air. Who do we have?
Hello, Dr. Kim, and hello, Celinda. This is Urate.
Hello, Urate.
And it was good to hear Celinda sharing, and I hear my echo because I think Tom has his phone, and I feel weird hearing my own voice in the background, so I think this feels better since we both closed the doors. And I just wanted to say that I could feel the same way like Celinda, building my brain cells really. And this whole way of mastery reading is really landing on me like a remembrance, like an expansion. And I enjoy the challenge of some things, like the way to look at different things in ways that maybe I've forgotten, and really allow myself like to have that more playfulness and lose that seriousness at certain events, which brings such a and relief and more spaciousness within me. I feel like the pace has been really good because I could not agree more with Celinda. You know, as you keep reading it over and over, I feel like I hear more. And sometimes I even question, you know, is this a new chapter already? And have to go back and look at the book. And I was like, oh, no, I guess I did not hear that part last time. So it's amazing how our ears, or my ears, keep growing, and my comprehension of the material is just—it's a pure gold what I'm receiving. So it feels really good, and I would say as the more I'm listening to the book, as you're reading and I'm following it in the book, all the other works, you know, Michael's work and Dr. Michael Rice's work, or, you know, Michael Singer's work, or the way of Peter Pretherwin, you know, and all of them, like, it just makes so much more sense. I can see much more of the use of the tools and untangling, and I feel like it's so good to have all these different teachers, because we all are such a different students that we perceive differently, and we can hear the same truth through a different way of expressing. So I'm just super grateful that I somehow was lucky. I feel like I'm so lucky and so guided in life. And again, I got so lucky that I attracted somehow this whole experience and, you know, and being part of this study, you know, of the book and beyond. And, yeah, just tears of joy. It feels really
wonderful. Good. Wonderful. Well, I appreciate the comments. I'm glad it's landing well for you. And you've helped us come to the end of our hour. So I will offer you blessings and look forward to the next time we get to talk, and mute you and remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice. Who might be mute challenged? Who maybe didn't turn herself on the switchboard yet? But she's coming here now.
Sitting here talking to myself? Thank you. I appreciate you.
Welcome. Have a great show.
Thanks. Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Thursday, February the 3rd, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1. And that puts you into queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael just a minute to get dialed in, and I'll direct you to our website as always. It's Y, again, WHYAGAIN.org. You can click on the Start Here button in the upper left corner, or you can scroll down to the bullseye in the middle of the page. Both of those, when you click them, will take you to the same place, and that's where you'll find all of the worksheets. Somebody asked the other day where to find the commitments, and they're listed under the worksheet as well. So if you go to the worksheets, the first thing is going to be the PowerPoint presentation and Chapter 24, and then a link that will take you to where all of the reality stress management wake-up sheets are. They're on a separate page because there's so many of them. MP3s of radio shows, there's information of how this matches parallels with the addiction programs, AA and such, information on the app, and then it'll say what learn what tools to use when, and for those who have no issues, it's got all of that, and then the other worksheets, and they are in alphabetical order, so if you go to C, commitments, there is all of the commitments. You click on that, and then there's the downloads for all of them. I do not have the most recent one done yet. We've had Aria for the last 2 days, and I had a niece and her family come in from Florida to visit Dad, and then working with Dad in the evenings, and I just haven't had computer time yet. So I do not have the newest one out on the website yet, but that's where you will find the commitments. And when I do get them done and up there, that's where the new ones will be. And so anyway, we hope that you can find all the tools that we use, that we have, that go along with all the DVDs. They're all on that page. All right. Welcome, Michael. I think I hear you talking through the wall, but can't hear you on the radio show.
Can see you through the wall, but not through the window, eh? Okay. Well, I'm back. Mute challenge, what can I say? So once again, welcome everybody. Delighted that you're here. As we move this conversation forward to the next level and the opportunities to come to look into our minds and look at the constructs there and where our world has trained us to be totally and completely irresponsible, and really to tell ourselves this giant lie that with our eyes we're looking at something outside of us, leaves us in a place where it's too easy to become a victim of the game and a victim of the world. So another aspect of this work is that of undoing the posture of victimhood in stepping into the role of one who consciously creates their lives. There's a workshop we do called On Creating Consciously. And it's all about how to become a conscious co-creator. You are going to create. You don't have any choice about that. It's just whether you're going to create out of hostility and fear or out of sweetness and beauty, out of the truth of who you are. I was listening to a presentation on some of the ancient philosophers, the Stoics, and at least one of them advised that, you know, every day you imagine the very worst you can possibly think of, and then nothing can surprise you the rest of the day. And if only there was an understanding that we are creators, and what we imagine, image in, what we bring in energetically to our fields is what our mind replicates and reproduces for us, and what we tend to resonate or attract in our world, then that piece of advice would probably be changed. But according to the professor that was presenting it, this was one of the very top-level, brilliant pieces of advice to give someone. Imagine the worst things that can happen to you. And then nothing worse can happen in your day. Well, not exactly the route I would choose to take, but to each their own. And you know, one of the pieces of the puzzle that the Greeks did give us in Stoicism comes out of Greek philosophy, was to guard the portals of the mind and realize that what we open our mind to is what we're going to get to live with. And, you know, recognizing that the output of my mind is called perception. If you go to the Course in Miracles, it says that perception is a skill that was made up by me to take the place of what the Creator gave me in creation. So there's an actuality. There's, you know, we've quoted the Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness in that time frame is 9 bits. So we oftentimes metaphorically, not meaning absolutely literally, refer to conscious awareness as the 9-bit mind. And in that time frame where 9 bits are visible, experienced consciously, something in the order of 9,991, you know, the other 10,000 bits are unconscious. And it's been estimated in that same time frame, which is about a 25th of a second, we perhaps live in a 20 trillion bit world. And looking at 9 bits out of what perhaps is 20 trillion bits sounds pretty silly to say we know how it all works. And one of the things we're going to offer with this set of tools is that we may not know how it all works, but we've got the tools with which to work through whatever is working and to bring about shifts and changes in our minds and our perceptual constructs. So this skill is something that, and we don't realize, you know, here we have this 20 trillion bit banquet in front of us, and we plop a 9-bit hostility or fear-based perceptual construct in front of it and say, there, now I know all about the world. And more false words than that were never spoken, because what that 9-bit mind always tells us first and foremost is about the mind that the 9 bits comes from. You know, the mind that is generating the perception exposed by what that perceptual construct is. And when, so when I'm in perception, I'm literally trapped in the past. And what the Course says about that world, it literally calls that a whole world, and it says that world will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. Now, what does it mean by cherish? Do I have to sit around and go, oh, I love my rage, I really enjoy my fear? No. I can just say something like, well, you know, I really want to heal, but, you know, this little bit of rage, just in case somebody comes along and I need it, I want to hang on to it. Well, now I've cherished my rage. I can say I want to be at peace and I want to get rid of my rage, but as long as I have a use for it, then I'm cherishing it, and it's not going to be removed. It's not going to let go. So whatever that thought based in hostility or fear is that keeps the perceptual mind going, it's got to be forgiven. It's got to be removed. You know, the thought might be it's the only way I can protect myself. It makes me strong enough to attack. I mean, there may be all kinds of crazy rationalizations, but if you're not at peace, you have a problem. And your hostility and fear are not going to serve the healing of that problem. What will serve the healing is forgiveness. And you know, remember that forgiveness is not about the Greek trickery that says if I let you off the hook, I've engaged in forgiveness. Because when I let somebody else off the hook, I have not engaged in forgiveness at all. I've engaged in pardoning. Call it what it is. It's pardoning. When it comes to forgiveness, it's a totally internal action that's about collapsing, pulling the rug out from our perceptual constructs, freeing ourselves from those constructs, the wounds and the entanglements of the past. So it's about removing these energetic patterns from one's own structure. Now, our wounds, they're the assaults, they're often multi-generational, that store the pain that blocks the experience of ourselves as love. It literally wipes out the capacity to experience ourselves as who we are, because this ongoing rolling hostility or fear keeps displacing that subtler energy. You know, when they talk about the still small voice, they're saying that it is subtle energy that will guide you if you're willing to listen. But if you've got all kinds of emotional noise and unresolved trauma within your structure, you're not going to hear the guidance that's available. Carl Jung says, and it will become one of the most powerful parts of your world and of your life. Carl Jung says it this way: until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives and we will call it fate. So whatever the root of those thought patterns are, we only see the tip of the iceberg when those thoughts are active. We're being run from the unconscious level, literally directing our lives. Now, I'd love to have a conversation and done a worksheet with Seneca, who's the Stoic, who said, you know, think of the worst things you could imagine happening, then nothing worse will happen in your day and you'll be a happy person. Boy, I'd love to introduce him to worksheets and to forgiveness. So the removal or forgiveness of assault energy creates an opening that facilitates the flow of light and love into every instant of our lives, into every cell in our structures. And in fact, when I choose that state of being, that state of love, it tends to wake up that same energy. It tends to resonate that same energy in others. The errant thoughts I made up, along with the thought disorders that I've learned or inherited from my culture, from my past generations, can be removed. And forgiveness is liberation from that image-making capability of my mind and the disorders that underlie its function. Now, if you're new to this work, I would say, in the research I've done in the last 50 years, if you're new to this work, I would say the chances of you having been exposed to anything to do with forgiveness are probably at least a million to one. So be prepared to learn an entirely new skill. And if you try to argue with it from your past because it's not logical, then you're just going to blow yourself out of the water in the possibility of using it. On the other hand, it doesn't mean you have to go, oh, that's the way it is. Okay, I accept it. There's nothing here to be believed. To believe a word, just try it out and see what happens. So it's going to take learning an entirely new skill, because first century Aramaic forgiveness does not look anything like what you've learned from this world of perception. And it's interesting, in the Course of Miracles, they categorize the world of perception as the world of darkness. So don't expect the world of darkness to have taught you anything about forgiveness. And everything you think you know about it, oh, I let them off the hook, I'm going to forgive them, is all a fraud. So we're going to invite you to drop that fraud and make the space for something new. So literally, we have this world of perception. And if you go to our YouTube channel, there's a video there entitled, What is the World? It's a lesson from the Course in Miracles. And we talk about the lowercase w world, the world of perception, the constructs of our minds, and the uppercase w world, the world that is actual, the actuality. And what forgiveness does is it collapses the perceptual constructs that we tend to lay over the actuality that blocks our ability to experience what's actually true. Perceptual world appears to be outside of us because, of course, with our eyes, we see it out there, right? And guess what? We've been tricked again. You've never seen anything with your body's eyes. It's not possible. Now, notice that virtually everybody believes, they open their eyes and they see what's out there. And that's the, one of the biggest frauds, another of the biggest frauds that's ever existed on the planet. Seeing does not happen in the eyes. Seeing happens in the mind. And with it, we've been fooled into giving it, you know, as the Course says, all the meaning that it has for me. Perception is a construct of the human mind. So this skill called perception is an image-making capability with which the world, pardon me, with which the mind constructs a world to match what has been trained through generations as familiar and seems desirable and true. Now, the only feature actually demanded by this skill is that it's familiar. It doesn't have to be anything true about it. As long as it feels familiar, you know, it fits with the good old family feeling. So once something fits the family pattern, it keeps us in the role to which we've been accustomed. And that we've been assigned in the family system or in the cultural system. That role may be painful, just degrading. But if we've accepted it, it's our role. And even though it's a total fraud, having been convinced it's who we are, if we accept this false identity as true, then we tend to think that that's who we are. And the idea here is to free yourself from that. Whatever your mind, remember the thought from the Course, I've given this all the meaning that it has for me. And these thought disorders tend to be generational. So each stimuli in the world, each event, resonates content from the mind, and according to what's resonated within any given mind, that mind constructs the world that you think you see out there, the world of perception, which is substituted for the actuality, the world the creators were, the creator actually created. So what ends up happening is most people live in a world of their own making, a construct in their own mind, thinking that it is outside of them and that they have no power over it, thinking it's beyond their control, when in fact, when one understands its source, it is totally collapsible and can be removed. The genius work of Yeshua is the forgiveness work, the removal process. And until the Greeks got a hold of it and made the world of internally generated perception real, taught us to blame somebody else for it, you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me afraid. And then, of course, the frosting is put on the cake, and we're told that we resolve the problem by forgiving them. And put forgiving in big quotes there, because this letting somebody else off the hook has nothing to do with forgiveness. So why would I let somebody else off the hook because my mind is in any given reality? The words "I forgive you" are words of sheer and total insanity. And this world of silliness, it really is silly when you get down to it, is called ego. And the ego is a state where the perceptual mind reflects the what is usually early errant thoughts that need to be undone. So in childhood, we're taught errant thoughts. In the words of Carl Jung, he says it this way: the little world of childhood with its familiar surroundings is a model for the greater world. The more intensively the family has stamped its character upon the child, the more it will tend to feel and see its earlier miniature world again in the bigger world of adult life. Now, I'm working on doing some writing, and so some of this will be a repeat, but it's juxtapositioned differently with different materials, so should open up new perceptual capabilities and more profound abilities to be able to question your perception and collapse what isn't true. So earlier miniature world just replicates for most people in adult life. And Jung goes on to say, naturally, this is not a conscious intellectual process. Our offering is that this world of ego, the non-being self, must be dissolved, and that's the aim of forgiveness. Letting other people off the hook because there's something untoward going on inside of you has nothing to do with forgiveness. It's not what it's about. Forgiveness is about removal. So internally generated perceptions come complete with color, sound, emotions, a whole literal world, which we then substitute for life and the actual experience as being presented by life. Now, the question becomes, why would anyone tolerate such a fraud? It's because it's made of our familiar patterns. Family, look at that word, familiar, familial, family patterns. And of course, if I made it up, it must be true and it must be perfect. And with these beliefs, the whole technique of substitution becomes acceptable. We habitually replace the actual world, the one that the Creator created, that world that is actually based in love, with this construct in the mind. And fewer are aware, and even fewer will admit it. Gee, everybody lives in that world of perceptual constructs. And our perceptual constructs are of our own making. There's a good parable, a metaphor for forgiveness, and just a little story. It just takes a couple of lines. An awestruck admirer looked at Michelangelo's finished statue of David and exclaimed, "How?" Michelangelo replied, "David was always there in the marble. I just took away everything that was not him." Now, forgiveness, as it's taught in A Course in Miracles, parallels first century Aramaic forgiveness. It takes away ego, everything that is not you. It's a quantum leap different and beyond anything ever presented about forgiveness in English, Latin, Greek, or Hebrew. There are no words to describe the actual process of forgiveness. You have to go all the way back to the Aramaic to find it. We've had this idea of pardoning substituted. You know, we did a Spanish class recently where Nene helped us. And it's interesting to look at the fact that in the Spanish language, the word forgive is pardon. Letting somebody else off the hook rather than removing the root of content in your mind that doesn't belong there. Forgiveness process, it generally, forgiveness is talked of in the context of theology, of churchianity. But it is absolutely the most profound psychological, physiological, energetic, and genetic truth ever presented. So in forgiveness are the keys to the undoing, the dissolution of this ego self, which accelerates as we stay connected to conscious, active, present love. So that's what we're here to understand and to carry out. And we're delighted that you're here to be part of it. And so, Ms. Jane, we're at about the 25-minute mark. Do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Oh, yeah, we have 34 minutes left, and there are no hands up. So, come on, press one. You're first in line.
So if you're out there with a thought or a question, if we can support you, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, our call-in number, most people just call and listen on their phones, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show, and then if you push 1, that'll raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will introduce you. So any particular situation, any particular stimuli resonates brain cells, content from the mind. If I say don't think about the color of your car, what comes to mind but the color of your car? So each event, pardon me, according to what's resonated within any particular mind, the mind constructs that world that we think we see and we think it's out there. The world of perception, again, is substitute for the actuality. And most of end up living in that world of their own making.
We have a hand up.
Oh, great. Well, let's say hello to our caller.
It's 541. I believe it's Julie.
Well, welcome, young lady. How are you? Hello, Julie. Are you mute challenged? We're not hearing your voice.
She had sent me a text that she couldn't get in queue, and so I told her I'd turn her on, but then she said that she would call in again, so let me refresh the board. Julie, if you're still on there, I've turned on your microphone. Oh, her hand's up. Hold on. There you go.
We found you. Hey, young lady.
Hi. Well, I just broke up
with
my boyfriend.
Thank you once again. I just want to publicly thank you again for connecting us with a woman who's got the show out where is she, in Utah? Looking forward to working with her. That's cool, and we'll keep everybody posted when that starts to happen.
Yeah, it's a great show if anybody wants to start listening to her podcast or anything. She interviews a lot of really good people that are in harmony with the work, you know. So speaking of harmony, I just am letting go of my boyfriend who is not a harmonious element in my life. And I just have, you know, I've had him. And I know I have to be responsible for everything that's coming up in me. So I'm just saying a lot's coming up.
Well, we'll hold the space for, you know, that's a big decision to make. I know that it was something you worked hard to put together and make work, and there are times, and of course it's everybody's his own choice, there are times when it's time to say, you know, this really isn't serving my purpose and working for you or for me, and to gently let it go, and of course continue to do your work so you don't have to turn around and create it with someone else. You can create something different.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah, so... Yeah, so continue doing my work. So I have to do a worksheet or something that find about 20 or 30 things. But, yeah, it's just, I'm just reporting, I guess. Are we having a session this coming Saturday?
It's the following Saturday. It's the second Saturday of each month.
Oh, okay. Right. The 12th then. Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, that'll be good. Yeah. I'll be in good shape for that.
We'll be on it. You'll be ready. And when
you
say do a worksheet, there may be, you know, on any particular aspect of, especially with something as big as letting go of a relationship that you held high hopes for, there may be many, many topics where there'll be many worksheets to be done, many shades of healing to take place. And say again?
Holding high hopes. Holding high hopes for. There's my goal.
Yeah. Next layer of clarity.
Yeah, thanks. I think that's a good place to start. I think I'm going to do something like a mood shifter or something like that. Anyway, Well, I don't know if anybody else is maybe wanting with a hand up or anything. So I don't want to just take this time up with my personal stuff, but just letting it be known that that's what's going on.
Well, we're here to support you. We're here to support you with your personal stuff. And you're the focus of the show at this moment. Any questions or thoughts or support needed, that's what we're here for. And you deserve to have as much time as you need in order to move through what you're moving through if you're ready and willing to be supported. So I invite you to, any questions you have, any arena where there's support needed, let's go for it. And who knows, as you do that, what you're going to open for someone else who doesn't even have the brain cells to do what you're doing. So,
well, I have a lot of raw feelings that I've just held back for so long. But, the crowning blow was Friday night when we've been arguing for every 2 weeks about stupid stuff, but it still comes up, and it's just showing the differences between us, And so I give up. There's differences, And he was really, really, he often gets very rageful with language and swearing and things like, God damn it. And, and I love God, and I just, that language really cuts, and want to be around it, and so in fact this time accidentally he recorded it on a phone message. His phone accidentally called me and my voicemail recorded him swearing for about 4 minutes of the argument. I couldn't hear my own words but heard his, and it's just a reminder. And I think Spirit just gave me a nice little sample to listen to every once in a while because it's toxic. And I navigate through it because I have the tools and enough love in my heart, but it still isn't worth it's not worth my expenditure.
Breathe.
Appreciate it, and there's no change. Yeah. I'm trying to solve it with the same thinking that got me into it, and I need to think differently.
Well, notice that earlier what you talked about were your emotions.
Yeah.
And remember that emotions are not directly changed. Emotions are reflections of thoughts. And toxic emotions are the result of toxic thoughts.
Yes.
The toxic thoughts that are being resonated by being treated this way, perhaps by having put yourself in that position, are what you really want to allow yourself to be conscious of and work through. I would suggest a mind shifter.
Right. Let me
get a pen handy.
I'm getting some paper. So we're talking about my toxic thoughts.
Your toxic thoughts, exactly. His toxic thoughts aren't going to impact you, except where you're in resonance with them.
Yeah, but he insists on us having these discussions that are toxic, and I just crumble. I just can't stand up to. I don't have facts. I can't debate. I don't want to even engage in it. So my toxic thoughts within the context of arguing, just like my parents' energies, I guess.
So notice you're back in interaction with your power person.
Yep.
And here's another opportunity for you to forgive us to what was implanted in those toxic situations.
I don't even know what to say was implanted. I guess I do the work.
So here's a mind shifter to assist.
Okay, thank you.
I deserve to be treated and spoken to.
Yes, okay.
As a cherished equal.
Yeah.
By anyone who I am in relationship with. So what is that resonating for you? What happens when you think that thought?
Well, I'm having to see and accept that I haven't been very cherished for a while here in this one, and that I must carry these energies forward unconsciously, creating a situation where I could allow someone to not cherish me.
So if you look back to your relationship with your power person, were you cherished? Were you treated lovingly, gently, and with respect?
Well, I accepted how I was treated as that, yes, but I guess I wasn't. I don't know. I guess in a way I feel like what's coming up now, I just feel so hated by this person. So I may have picked up on energies of my father or my mother hating that they were in their situation and stuck with children to bring up. I don't know. Wanting to run away. I always want to run away because, and when they would argue, you know, one of them would throw dishes on the floor and drive out of the driveway, screeching the tires, come back calmer, you know. I've been mimicking that behavior in the way I do it. You know, I don't get quite so dramatic, but I've been mimicking that.
So when we have unresolved thought disorders in our minds, we will tend to be drawn to circumstances and situations, and we'll tend to do behaviors that will replicate those dynamics. And that becomes a strong draw, and I think that it comes from the unconscious desire to work through those things, so we set ourselves up. But then once we find ourselves in a situation that even comes close to mimicking that, am I going to do something different than what I did originally? That's where the change has to take place. Rather than, oh, well, I just kowtow and let it happen, I speak up lovingly, gently, respectfully. I do my own work, and I clean up my own mind. And what tends to happen as I clean up my mind is I will tend to draw different behavior out of the people around me.
So I don't try to fix it by speaking up to the other person about, let's resolve these things. I have to clean it from within my own mind.
Well, you want to clean it from within your mind, but what I would suggest you do is you go back to the email that Jeannie sent you when you were after we completed the codependence to interdependence communication practice intensive, and I'd suggest you go back and you do go through all the videos and all the work we did with responsibility communication.
Yeah.
And that is where you speak out of a connected space of love, you own your issues, you ask for support in healing your issues, and you refuse to play the game.
Okay. I that was always the hardest part of that intensive for me. I do feel like incapable of doing that. I don't remember. I haven't practiced it enough. I don't remember how to do it.
So that's why I'm suggesting you go back. That's why you've got videos for continued self-study to go back and develop the brain cells for doing it differently. You know, these are things we should have been taught in childhood, but most of us were taught the opposite. And so one of the challenges to learning these new skills, behaviors, and ways of acting is the making room for a new possibility to come in. rather than being hooked in the old generational patterns, it just seems so normal that, of course, that's what everybody does, because it's not what everybody does, and it's not normal.
Yeah.
So what I acknowledge you for right now is that instead of just doing the pattern over and over and over again, you're waking up, you're asking for support, and you're doing your work. You know, you're developing the brain cells for doing something different. Could you imagine your mom, after one of those events happening with your dad, picking up and calling into the radio show and having this conversation?
Well, I actually think she would have if it had been available.
If she'd had the tools?
I've read some notes in her diary where she's looking back on, boy, if I had only known this back then, you know.
Right. I hear you.
Yeah. But so I think she, in her own way, was probably trying but didn't really have the tools to get through it. And, okay, so here's a belief. So I believe that if my mom couldn't do it, I might not be able to either, which I know is not true, but I've been trying to see her as a model for showing me how to do it, which means I'm relying on my power person instead of me being empowered to find a new way that she may have never found.
Right, right. So if you imagine someone who wanted to fly before the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk flew their first plane, was it even a possibility for them?
No, it was just an imagining.
Not even possible. And
a
so
hope or
life without tools.
Mm-hmm.
So a hope and a conviction, but no possibility. Flight had not been invented. There were no airplanes to jump on.
True.
And so if you go back to your mother and father engaging the way they engaged, you know, I don't know, maybe the closest mind that might have had an inkling that this kind of healing was possible was maybe 1,000 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And so not even conceivable, even though she was looking. You conceived of, and you stepped up, and despite a lot of resistance and a lot of strife and a lot of conflict in yourself, you kept putting one foot in front of the other, and here you are having this conversation. I think that's pretty amazing and pretty powerful. And you've got the tools. So I'd give you an assignment, and that would be to sit down and start with the first communication practicum video in the intensive, watch them all through at least once, and start building the brain cells on another level. I mean, you're going to hear things there that you'll go, oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, I forgot. I didn't remember. Oh, yeah, there it is. And what you're doing is building brain cells. And, you know, an important part of building the brain cells for doing something new is breaking down the brain cells that say it's not possible, it's not conceivable, it can never happen, and I could never do that. So that's half of the task is undoing that to make room for the possibility of doing it differently. So I would support you really getting committed and getting those videos out and hitting the links and watching them. Stay with them. Have your notebook from the first time you went through the intensive and go through every thought wherever something is added and start building the brain cells for another level of true responsibility communication and responsibility for forgiveness of whatever the dynamics are in your own mind.
It seems like so
good
much
breath.
Homework. I know, but
well,
it seems like homework.
Yeah. So, Julie, you're answering for yourself literally the question of the ages that all of the philosophers for thousands of years, millions of people have been looking and looking and looking. And they followed the rule of the ego, which says, seek, but do not find.
Yeah.
You have been seeking, you have found, and now you're going to do more of the undoing process that says it's not possible as you build the brain cells for living in a whole different way. And that's what it takes. You know, you've heard me use that in that example of, you know, the 700-ton warship floating through, you know, the Pacific Ocean at full speed, you know, doing 70 knots an hour, and the captain says, turn this thing around. That thing isn't turned around 10 minutes or 10 hours later, probably. I don't know how long it takes, hours, to take something with that much inertia, turn it around to go the other way. And you're doing that, the first generation doing it.
Okay, so I was writing down some notes, and I realized that I have a goal to not find.
Well, that's pretty typical.
Yeah, and so and then the new goal is to undo the do not find brain cells that are in
exactly.
there, imposing their power over me.
Yeah. Remember
the
introduction that I did. Go ahead, say it again.
Well, I'm allowing those brain cells to overpower me. When I change my mind, everything goes differently.
So do some forgiveness with those issues. But go back and give a listen to the show once again in the part where I talked about how these thought disorders that are familiar, which the root of the word familiar is family, and seem real and true. There doesn't have to be anything real and true about them. They just have to be familiar. And if the familiar is, if what the family system handed and the cultural system handed is, well, you know, I deserve this and things are never going to get any better and it could never change for me, then those thought disorders are what need to be confronted and forgiven. And when they come up, you know, one of the keys is to take responsibility for them rather than just puking them on somebody else, which is what most people do. To really stop, you know, when your mind wants to lash out or, you know, be vicious or condescending or whatever to someone else, to stop and take responsibility. Oh, this is a thought disorder. How did it feel when my power person berated me like this? Like I want to berate this person in front of me. And stop, even though it may feel good to do it. Because it feels like power. You know, when one watched a power person having power over themselves in the unconscious, the memory of that, it's like, this is how I'll feel powerful. So I'll take this person that I say, I cherish you deeply, and I'll puke all over them and go, yeah, that feels good. That feels like power. And it's just replicating power person dynamics. No, I'm going to stop. I'm going to take responsibility and say to myself, no, I don't want to take vengeance on this person. I don't want to degrade this person. I don't want to drive this person to the ground like my power person did me. I want to uplift them. I want to cherish them. I want to support them. I want to do those same things for myself and change the dynamic of that inertia-bound mind that just wants to puke the same way the power person did. You know, and where there are thought disorders about the partner that you're separating from, to be vigilant about those, be conscious of those parts of you that may have this little thing of, well, I want to take vengeance or, you know, and stop and focus on, you know, that's the place to speak the commitment. You know, maybe you've decided that, you know, direct communication is not appropriate anymore, but you can sit down and write a letter that maybe you'll burn that says, I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth, to be true to you and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect in my thoughts, my words, and my actions, whether in your presence and you know, reinforce in your own mind that that's how you want to behave. That commitment is for you shifting your mind. And then as you make a space for a true relationship to come in, instead of following the old pattern, you'll have those new brain cells that go, oh, yeah, there's a part of me that wants to do what my power person did to me and degrade this person, and I'm going to stop. I'm going to forgive that inclination in me. I'm going to change my inertia And I'm going to offer this person something sweet and caring and nurturing and cherishing and loving, rather than think, ha, I'm the one with the power because I can, you know, scrape your nose. Good breath. That's the kind that heals.
You know, I don't see that I'm the one dishing that out to him. He is.
I didn't suggest you were.
Well, because he's
I'm
the
just
one
saying if
from his past that are but it's, he's reflecting to me that he doesn't feel respected by me, you know, and that's
right.
His big complaint, or that I'm the one being condescending, or I'm the one that. You know, insulting him or something, but he really has
yeah.
brain cells to insult and disrespect. So, I mean, I can't change that.
So we're
to any of that.
Right. You can't. You can only change yours. But if you go back to your relationship with your power person, was your power person ever condescending and disrespectful to you?
Probably. I think so. Yeah. Like, why aren't you doing it right and doing it better and. I don't know that I got told that, but that's the energy. I can recognize the energy.
It seems to me I can remember times when you processed being so degraded that you were locked in a closet. Am I remembering that correctly?
I was punished by having to go to my room, and then I was defending myself, and so it turned into a whole day in my room. And then 2 days,
mm-hmm.
and then 3 days, and up to 4 days. And so now I have all these patterns of what I did with my creative energy for 4 days. You
mm-hmm.
know, I'm in prison. And that's what happened.
So then what I'd invite you to look at is, were there times when with maybe just a breath or a look, or a single word, you were able to replicate your power person's behavior of punishment and not respecting? That maybe that came out of you, even though you weren't aware of it, that it was there? And if it did,
yeah.
you know, and it's quite likely in a tit-for-tat kind of interaction it was there, then instead of delighting in it, like it sounds like perhaps your power person did, that's where you stop and you go, I refuse to do this, and I'm going to heal this in me. If there's any of that there, which if your power person did it to you, the chances of it being there are pretty good.
Well, okay, this is close to what happens with my 4-day pattern of retreating and isolating, being isolated as a punishment.
Sent to your room.
Sent to my room. And then, so then when I'm feeling the stress is up and the chips are down with my partner because I can't, I'm resonating incapability of handling the conversation because it's not in my subject matter or brain cells. And
right.
And so I retreat and I say I need time to myself because I'm trying to save myself basically and recover and how carve out my life and who I am instead of always
right.
having it attacked and dissolved by this power person transference I'm allowing to happen.
Right. And chances are if that's the energy that was moving in you, then it was perhaps there were verbal or physical cues that were being given that resonated
yeah.
him being abandoned, which he considered to be disrespected. And, you know, cleaning up those kinds of dynamics, it's a major, major piece of work to do.
I know. Well, I'm on my own now, that's for sure. I've removed myself, and I doubt he's going to cover any ground to, you know, making it work or trying to make changes. So it's all up to me, and I just have to do it for me, period. It's not about him at this point. It's all about me.
It's about you. It's for you.
Preparing my energies and having the life I'm meant to be and live.
Right.
So I'm escaping.
So you've got our support for going there.
I'm escaping from a bad situation that I created by not by letting those energies create for me and not not really taking responsibility to move out of it or to move my mind out of to clear my mind. I have to clear my mind.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it sounded like you made yourself quite available to be abused, and that's why I suggested the mind shift that I suggested. Because you deserve something different than that. And so being aware of that in the future, you'll know that the only energy that you deserve is to be treated lovingly, gently, and with respect. And if something less than that comes up, what am I going to do? Oh, I'll hold this in my heart and listen. As we each learn to speak, experience, and be responsible for our own realities, I'm here for and with you, keeping communication open and keeping love conscious, active, and present as we heal. Celebrate life and grow together.
So I'm going to do this in my own relationship here by myself?
In your own relationship, totally, completely, unilaterally, with you in the mirror.
But I'm saying that to him.
And
okay, I'm saying
if you're saying it to you, but also if you're moving into thought disorders that you want to point toward him. Even though you may never talk to him again, you still want to do that with him.
Okay. So I'll do it energetically.
Exactly. Put your energetic devotion to living that commitment, whether in his presence or not.
Okay. And mainly I'm doing this for myself. Because I can't just go back just because I feel better or he feels better, because it'll come up again if I don't do my work.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
And as you do that, you'll be cleaning up your generations.
Yeah.
You know, go back and listen to that segment of the intensive where Magda did that piece of work with her grandfather. That's so profoundly powerful. Do you have a link to that?
Yeah, I do. I remember it. Thank you. You know, I woke up one morning and I had these words teaching to me from wherever it was, and saying to be trusted and trustworthy. You know, it's really deep that was a matter needed to.
Sounds like direct guidance from Rukka.
And so, yeah, anyway, that was just in this last week. I guess I'm trusting something right now, big time.
Well, you might go back to the course and read the section on the development of trust. It's powerful.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it lays out several stages. You know, it's kind of like Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was a psychiatrist that worked with the stages of grief. Well, the course lays out the stages of developing trust and the things you'll go through. And it's pretty profound, pretty powerful. So I suggest you might want to read that. And we're down to the last minute or so. So I'm going to have to close the conversation out. But if it's appropriate and things are still moving tomorrow, let's continue the conversation and let's take it to the next level.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, young lady, we're holding the space. Nice to hear you be able to smile and laugh in the middle of it all. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us, lending us your ears. Pass the energy and the information on. If this show has been meaningful to you, go to our archives, grab a copy. If there's somebody that you think might be ready to hear it, pass it on. In the meantime, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.